Kia ora and welcome, Susie Wiles.
Kia ora.
10 to 12 it is. Our science commentator today wants to tell us about a new COVID study. I just sort of set the premise a little bit earlier, Susie, that we are at an interesting kind of time now where we're looking at what elimination means with Delta. Very hard to get back to zero, and also with our vaccines beginning to rise. There's a few quite diverse questions coming in from you, but do you want to set the scene with the COVID study and how it all fits with this?
Yeah, so this is a study that's just come out of the USA, and I think it's a really, really good counter to some of the narrative we hear around, you know, just learning to live with the virus, because frankly, those who are, you know, vulnerable are kind of like the dry tinder, they call it, you know, people who are elderly, so they'll sort of die anyway at some point. That's, you know, that's maybe being a little harsh, but that's sort of what the argument is. So this study was basically took a whole bunch of data from the CDC, from the Health and Retirement Study. And what they did was they calculated, so based on lives that have been lost to COVID in the USA already, actually just up to March this year, and then calculated basically how many lives how many years of life was lost by those people. And there's a couple of things they do, they a couple of calculations, one of which is called this quality adjusted years of life. And so that essentially what you do is you take the age that somebody's died, what their likely life expectancy would be, and then this is how you sort of work out this calculation. And the number that's come back is absolutely staggering. So it is 9 million years of life lost from deaths in the pandemic so far in the USA alone. And the reason it's so high is because actually there's been a large number, about half of that those years lost are from deaths in 25 to 64 year olds. So people who would have, you know, a considerable life still ahead of them. And the other thing that's really awful about the study, and it's something that we've seen, we're seeing play out everywhere, including here, is that certain communities are harder hit than others. And so in the USA, it's been the Black and Hispanic communities. And so, you know, there's a real inequity to who essentially suffers from this. And it's not just losing the elderly who we'd lose anyway, you know, to influenza or old age or whatever. It's actually massively impacting on younger people too. And so it's just another reason why we have to stick with elimination until we have more options, and this is what elimination gives us. So I think it's kind of sad that everybody seems to think because we're moving down the alert levels and we still have some cases, this means we've given up on elimination. It's not at all. It's, you know, trying to use basically level three in combination with test, trace, isolate, and vaccinate as the kind of strategy for getting us there. It might take a while, but it's, you know, we shouldn't be giving up on elimination at all.
Be careful with the everyone. It might be everyone in certain places, but actually the polls that are done consistently by the likes of Talbot Mills still show a very high level of support for elimination. What we are seeing is clearly a transition in what it means, and ultimately the reality that as vaccinations get higher, we will get to that point where we are living with more of it in the country. I mean, there's no country in the world that's not looking ahead to that point. They're just setting it at different levels. Some at 70% vaccination, some at 80% vaccination. It's interesting now that even government ministers are coming out now and talking about 90% plus as being what opens the door for us really being able to get back to some sort of normality. And ambitious
can
is that...
Can I address that, though?
Yes, please.
Because what's really interesting is the is what that 70 or 80 or 90% means. And what the modelling is really clear that it's to do with population, not those who are currently eligible.
Now, that is a very good point, because currently eligible is over 12s, and that leaves another 800,000 or so New Zealanders. At the moment, we're looking at vaccinations for children. The Pfizer just reporting some initial results, but encouraging initial results, I think, on a lower dose and efficacy in children. But a fair point. However, when we are hearing increasingly in New Zealand people talking about 90% as the target, we are talking about 90% of over 12s. And how do you read that as being a gateway to at least much more liberalisation?
It would be, well, so I guess it depends what we mean by liberalization, because if we used it as an opportunity to just basically allow the virus to start coming in, it would be an absolute disaster. This is what we're seeing in the USA with, you know, pediatric intensive care units becoming overwhelmed. And again, we know what communities are going to be most affected. So it really worries me. What I would hope is that if we got to 90% of over 12 vaccinated, it would mean that we could use less restrictions if we had outbreaks, that we might be able to do some tweaking around, you know, around managed isolation, because more of us would be protected. But from my perspective, it's really clear that this does not mean a return to 2019. You know, not until our children are vaccinated.
Let's look at a couple of questions, Susie, and they are quite diverse.
Okay.
This one's interesting, though. Let's address some of those things that circulate on the internet and get people genuinely concerned. This emailer says, I've heard that one of the fears contributing to vaccine reluctance are reports, in inverted commas, of the vaccine affecting fertility. A friend of mine who's extremely rational and has vaccinated all her family, herself included, but not her 16-year-old for this reason. I've also heard from another friend who's an ED nurse, quoting a study, admittedly with a small sample size, from a urologist in Miami, that COVID has much more significant impact on fertility and even sexual function than the vaccine. What do we know? And this is often the case, isn't it, about the risks of one side effect, allegedly, versus the greater risks of no vaccination?
Yeah, so it's absolutely fascinating that people, this is sort of a human trait, and it'd be really interesting to talk to a psychologist about this, how we kind of fear the unknown, where the stuff we're given actual evidence for, we sort of don't fear as much. So the actual evidence at the moment is overwhelming that, you know, COVID-19 has, you know, is likely to have an impact on things like fertility, you know, not only through the impacts of long COVID, you know, in terms of people can't have, some people can't have vigorous exercise. You know, some people are left with this kind of brain fog and fatigue. So those things will interfere with you know, the act of making a baby, right? But all these reports coming in now of sexual dysfunction, so erectile dysfunction, you know, premature ejaculation, not being able to ejaculate, they are all things that will impact on fertility. Whereas all the evidence we're getting so far, there's like no sign of that in terms of the vaccinations. You know, we've seen, and admittedly, these are small studies at the moment, but all of them are pointing in the same direction where, you know, there's people who've given sperm before and after donation, no impact there. People going through IVF, no impact on success. People who've been vaccinated and who happen to have got pregnant during that process, no change in miscarriage rates. So it's unlikely that it's going to have a long-term impact, you know, anywhere near the impact that we see from the disease.
It's the challenge when there's so many vaccinations happening. It's like with deaths in older people. A percentage per week were going to die regardless of the fact they had their vaccine that week. And it's the difference between correlation and causation. Very, very quickly, and maybe we'll pick up on these next time, someone asking about natural immunity or naturally acquired immunity. What do we know if you've had COVID? I'm literally giving you 40 seconds to set the scene.
Okay.
And immunity.
So certainly it looks like most people, if you have COVID, you're well protected. There have been some cases where people have been infected in the past. I guess the problem is that that comes at a huge cost, right? So it's not a strategy that we should use just on the off chance that some people will be better protected in the future.
Thank you, Susie. We might pick up on that next time. I'll keep some of these questions because they are things still on people's mind. Thank you very, very much, Susie Wiles.